for some families, a benchmark is just that this child will stop putting his fingers in other people's eyes. For other families, is that he will stop jumping, or will stop shouting, or will sleep at least 5 hours in a row during the night. So it's very different from family to family. But for many families, it really has a potential to improve the quality of life. And many families are keep thanking me for changing their life.
This is the Cannabis Enigma, cutting through the smoke to have informed, serious conversations for regular people.
Hi, I'm your host, Varda Bachrach.
And I'm Michael Schaefer-Omerman.
One of the controversial things about medical cannabis is when it's used on children. And considering the stigmas around cannabis as a recreational drug and its history of being prohibited, I guess that's not so surprising.
No, it's pretty understandable, actually. But there are a few conditions where medical cannabis is being used to treat children, primarily severe forms of epilepsy, and more frequently, in recent years, autism.
In the first episode of this podcast, we spoke about how parents of children with epilepsy in the UK were really instrumental in pushing lawmakers to make changes to the regulations around medical cannabis.
With autism, something similar has been happening. But instead of just pushing lawmakers to make change, we're seeing parents pushing doctors and scientists to do more serious research. And that research is actually happening. In this episode, we're going to be speaking to Dr. Adia Run, one of the leading researchers on this topic. He recently completed several scientific studies on children with autism and medical cannabis. I caught up with Dr. Aran at CanX, a conference in Tel Aviv in September 2019. And, well, you'll hear from some of the background noise that I basically cornered him in the hallway after a talk he gave.
And what has his research found?
Well, firstly, that cannabis seems to be an effective treatment for a lot of autistic kids. But one of the more fascinating things that we spoke about was how with a condition like autism, you're not actually just treating the patient themselves. A successful treatment, including with cannabis, improves the quality of life for the whole family.
You know, I'm just thinking about people I know, friends I've got whose children have autism, and just the toll it takes on the whole family. Let's just listen to the interview and see what he has to say.
You just completed a few studies about treating children with autism with cannabis. Can you tell me a little bit about the study and how you started it?
Yeah, so there is a lot of evidence from parents, from families, that medical cannabis helps their children, helps in the behavioral problems, also help in the social deficits. There are some case reports of children who start talking and things like that. And we have decided to look into it in a clinical trial because, as you know, many case reports or many anecdotes are not evidence, and we need the evidence in medicine. It's an evidence-based approach. So we have started with an observational study. We just took the most severe children who failed any other medications, and we tried it. And so what happened, and we saw that in this open label study, which means that there was no placebo, each child knew what he is taking, each family knew, we saw a substantial improvement in the behavioral problems and also in the social deficits. But it was not a controlled study, and we knew that there is a huge placebo effect also in autism, and it might not be the cannabis as the hopes of the parents and so on. So we have conducted a randomized study. It was a large randomized study. It was not published yet, so I cannot reveal the results, though it was completed. But in this study, there were 150 children, and we also looked not only if cannabis work or not, but also to a thing called an entourage effect. So we were looking if it's only the two main cannabinoids, or maybe it's also other terpenes and flavonoids that might help, and we found, generally speaking, I cannot say the exact results, but generally speaking, we found good indications for this treatment. We find that we should continue researching this option because it can really give a hope for the many, many children with autism that currently do not have an answer for the behavioral problems, for the social deficits, because there are no established pharmacological treatment for the social deficits, for example. And we hope that if we will continue studying this line of treatment, there might be a hope or might be a treatment for those children who do not respond well to medications.
We see in a lot of applications of medical cannabis that it's treated as a second, third, fourth line of treatment. Mm-hmm. Does that make, you know, considering how hard it is to treat autism, does that make it a particularly, you know, good case for using it?
Yeah, currently we must do it like that. Currently, we cannot use cannabis as a first line because we don't have enough evidence to justify it. Maybe in 5 years or even 3 years, we will have more results and it will be a possibility to treat children as a first line treatment. But currently, we cannot do that because we don't have enough evidence, not for the efficacy, not for the safety, and we must give it only after failure of other medications.
What are the unique challenges of treating children with autism with no medications or with cannabis specifically, be it delivery or anything else?
So, surprisingly, we didn't have a unique challenge with taking the treatment because most children complied with this treatment, though the taste is probably not as good. I didn't try, but maybe for them it's terrible, or maybe they understand in some level that it helps them and that's why they are cooperating with that. We have the general challenges of trying something new. We were not sure about the efficacy and not about the safety, and of course we were afraid that anything that happened to the child might be related to that. We are now happy to see that we didn't encounter severe adverse events for these treatments, but we didn't knew that when we began trying the treatment.
With autism, you know, a lot of the problems and the treatment, I imagine that the benchmarks for what constitutes a success also, you know, it bleeds a lot into quality of life, not only for the patient themselves, but for their family. Mm-hmm. So what are the benchmarks that you're looking for to try and achieve for a successful treatment?
Yeah, it's different from family to family. For some families, the benchmark is just that this child will stop putting his fingers in other people's eyes. For other families, is that he will stop jumping or will stop shouting or will sleep at least 5 hours in a row during the night. So it's very different from family to family. But you are right that for many families, it really has a potential to improve the quality of life. And many families are keep thanking me for changing their lives, they say. So it might substantially improve the quality of life.
What do we know about the relationship between the endocannabinoid deficiencies in people with autism generally, but also, you know, we just heard you speak on a panel. Mm-hmm. Where somebody raised the question about whether this treatment could be more effective where that deficiency is greater.
Yeah, we don't know now. Currently, we don't know if for those children with lower endocannabinoid level in the blood will benefit more from this line of treatment. We are not sure if this is the case. We will have to look into that in the next studies.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you for speaking with us.
Thank you.
I'm Varda Bakra. This episode was produced and edited by Michael Schaefer Omerman with technical assistance from Yoav Mordor. If you enjoyed this episode, please hit subscribe and leave us a rating or review on iTunes. And check back for new episodes every 2 weeks.